Thank you to First Day for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Jen Higgins is a resident of Arkansas, mother, and founder of Anyway Socks, a company on a mission to help end domestic violence. Jen was inspired to create the company after the loss of her best friend, Brooke. In years prior, Brooke had been surviving and attempting to escape a violent relationship, and Jen was doing her best to be Brooke's support person. However, it was after the tragic loss of Brooke that Jen was left with a gaping hole in her heart and a mission on her mind. She now offers support to domestic violence resources by way of her company, and she continues to share Brooke's memory with the world in order to make change. She also works hard to bring awareness to the deep impact that being a co-victim of abuse can have on a loved one's trajectory. The Broken Cycle Media team is incredibly grateful for Jen's strength, perspective, and mission. This episode is dedicated in loving memory of Brooke.
I am Jen Higgins. I live in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I started a company called Anyway Socks about 2021 that supports our mission of trying to get people to leave a bad situation any way they can, even if all you have are mismatched socks, which is what we sell, mismatched socks and t-shirts, trying to support people through the toughest times of their lives. We do give back at least 10% of total revenue to domestic abuse organizations. I have two kids. They are my everything. They, of course, are lovely and perfect and hilarious. I grew up in a smaller town in Arkansas, not Fayetteville where I live now, but it's only an hour and a half away. It was about 25,000 people, so not tiny, but for Arkansas, that's a pretty good size town. Arkansas is a beautiful state. The rivers, the streams, the trees, it is really beautiful. And you forget how beautiful it is when you live here. You just take it for granted. But then if you go somewhere else for a while and you come back, you're like, this place is just really, really gorgeous. If you're from Arkansas, you have a deep love for Arkansas. My parents are amazing people who are really my best friends. I mean, we still talk every day. I have my mom and dad and my sister. We were all very close. Growing up, I've always been very entrepreneurial. My dad had his own business and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I never really had anything horribly dramatic happen in my life. I did not grow up in an abusive home. I didn't really even know anything like that existed until later on in my life. I really liked my small town and I will not say anything bad about it, but I never really felt comfortable in my own skin there. And I don't think it had anything to do with anybody else. I think it was just me trying to grow up and figure out who I was and what I liked and what was important to me. But I never really had that core group of friends or like a bestie. And I always wanted that and always wondered what was wrong with me or what was I missing to have that in my life. I did find somebody that was a great friend to me, and we ended up getting married, probably too early, but we did get married, and we moved to other towns in Arkansas. We moved to Little Rock and then Hot Springs, but then we ended back up in my hometown. Nothing wrong with that, but it's also hard to ever become who you're going to be when everybody just remembers who you always were. To me, it was very important that I get out of there and try a different path in life. I didn't really figure out who I was until I got out of that town and moved up to Fayetteville. I finally convinced my husband that it was time for us to go. And basically, I said, listen, we're going to move to Northwest Arkansas. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I've already called a realtor. I need to get out of here. So we moved up there in November of 2012. We had done a lot of looking around and trying to figure out what neighborhood we wanted to move to and found what we thought was a really great neighborhood. We wanted to find a place that had kids, our kids' ages, lots of other couples our own age so that we could forge friendships. And we did find a great neighborhood that had all of that. I did homeschool my kids, so I didn't really know anybody. My sister lived up here, but she kind of had her own life and her own job. And so it was a little bit hard. But the good thing about our neighborhood was the parents would always be sitting out in their driveways when the kids got home from school. And then we would just watch the kids play and we would have wine and snacks. It might turn into barbecues. So you really got to know the neighbors pretty good. But there was one girl there I became especially close to, and her name was Brooke. The first time I met Brooke, it was just me and the kids, and we had been invited to dinner down the street, and I walked into their kitchen, and they were making chili. She was cutting up cheese and putting that on a board with crackers and stuff like that for the chili. She was a little standoffish at first, and so they were like, what grade are your kids in? And I remember thinking, I homeschool, so this is always a difficult question. Why does everything have to be so difficult? I told them I homeschooled, and the room just kind of was silent. And then Brooke was like, oh, well, that's really cool. Like, I definitely don't have the patience to do that. And it kind of just broke the tension. She immediately made me feel comfortable about that. I liked her immediately. Brooke was fierce, hilarious. She was mama bear to the nth degree. She was beautiful, so intelligent. She was a nurse practitioner. She had everything going for her. You didn't mess with Brooke. For example, somebody was speeding down the street one time and she just chased after them. And then eventually they came back and apologized for speeding down the street. She was just one of those people that said what was on her mind. She was not a wallflower at all. We would just laugh and laugh and laugh about the stupidest things. She was a great storyteller, so she would tell us stories about her growing up. She was one of four girls. She definitely was full of life. She was a wonderful mother, and she was a beautiful person to have as a friend. Brooke was divorced, and she has three kids. If she had her kids with her, like, you didn't see Brooke. She was with her kids. She would be out there with us when the kids were out there, but like the kids had anything going on, she was there. She wanted to just spend time with them. She wanted to make sure they were having a good time. She loved those kids more than anything. She did have a boyfriend, but it was very private. Our neighborhood, even though we were close, was very gossipy. I mean, you didn't talk about things you didn't want people to know. People talk. And I just thought she wanted to keep this relationship private. You know how things are when you have kids and you're trying to date. So I didn't really think that much about it. I thought she would talk about it when she was ready to talk about it. And if it got serious, of course we would know about it. She told me his name. I only ran into him one time. She had a dog that would always get out and run all over the neighborhood. So I got him back and I was putting him back into her backyard and her garage opened and a car started to pull out. I remember thinking, okay, well, this must be her boyfriend. I wonder if he was about to get out and go look for the dog. So I stopped the car and I said, hey, I'm Jen. I just brought Moose back, put him in the backyard. And he just kind of nodded through the glass, didn't even roll down the window, which I thought was weird. I could tell she was getting a little bit more distant and just seemed to be withdrawn and a little nervous. I would just try to make sure that I spent time with just her because I knew that something was going on, but I wasn't sure what it was. And I didn't know if it was related to him or if it was just work or if it was the kids. It could have been a million different things. There were some little things that would pop up every now and then. She would have like weird bruises. And she would say, oh, I'm so klutzy, you know, I just ran into the wall. And she was klutzy, so I just didn't really even think anything was happening. We were sitting out on the back porch one day, and she was telling me that she was having trouble with her boyfriend. She wasn't sure what she was going to do. And she never said the word abuse. She never said anything that was happening, but it made me very uncomfortable in my soul how she was acting. Like, I knew that something was wrong and that she was going to need my help to get through whatever it was she was going through. I started sleeping with my phone underneath my pillow because I just thought something's going to happen and she's going to need me.
Thank you again to First Day for sponsoring this episode. As a mother of two kiddos of elementary and middle school ages, it honestly feels like every other week we're battling a new virus. And if I'm being brutally honest, finding the right supplement that bastions my kiddos' immune system has felt impossible in the past. Especially as they've navigated their stages as picky eaters, I know they've lacked the nutrients to stay healthy. That's why I am obsessed with First Day Daily Multivitamins. First Day is one of the first brands with vitamins designed to fight hidden hunger and nutrient gaps. First Day makes clean, science-backed multivitamins for kids, teens, and adults that have no added sugar and no artificial ingredients, no fake dyes, and no crushed bones. With just two gummies a day that have 9 essential vitamins for brain and mood support, and a superfood blend of 12 organic fruits and veggies, you're boosting your kids' nutrition, mood, sleep, and health. And I bet you didn't even know that First Day's multivitamin has more folate than 1.5 cups of spinach and more vitamin B than 5 cups of broccoli. Plus, First Day vitamins are tested for 200-plus toxins and holds the Clean Label Purity Award. In fact, 83% of parents say First Day improved their kids' overall behavior. And it's true for my kids. I've noticed calmer moods and better days since they've started taking their First Day vitamins. And you don't even have to take just my word for it. First Day is trusted by over 1 million families, and their Kids and Teens Multi are the number 1 and 2 children's vitamins at Target. Not to mention that they have a 45-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it with confidence. Clinically absorbable, family safe, actually effective. For a limited time only, our listeners are getting an insane deal too. Use code WCN to get up to 57% off at firstday.com. That's up to 57% off and a free gift with code WCN at firstday.com. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them What Came Next sent you.
I started sleeping with my phone underneath my pillow because I just thought something's going to happen and she's going to need me. One morning in 2016, so we had lived there for 4 years, and she had been with this guy for 4 years. She did call me. She was crying and she asked me to come down, and then she sent me a picture of herself and my blood just ran cold. I ran down there and he had beaten her pretty severely. I've never seen anything like it. We picked up a gallon bag full of hair that he had ripped out of her head. There was blood on her mattress. It was just heartbreaking, and it was scary, and it was something that I'd never experienced before. I get her kind of calmed down and got her in the shower just to stabilize her. And then she says that her kids were there. She never let her boyfriend come over when her kids were there. This is, as far as I know, the only time he had ever been there when the kids were there. And I don't know if he came over after the kids were in bed. In hindsight, I probably should have asked more. I did not. I just wanted to make sure everybody was okay. Got her cleaned up. I got the kids up, told them that their mom had a medical emergency at the hospital that they had called her in for. I took them to school. I came back and got her to the police. I didn't really give her a choice on whether or not we were going to the police. She did not want to go. I know now that is a very common reaction. So I think I pushed her to do something she probably wasn't ready to do, but I also don't know if she ever would have been ready to do it. And I didn't really give her a choice. Actually, I took her to the wrong police station, but they could see by the look on my face and then the way she was looking that they needed to go ahead and take the report. I stayed out in the waiting room. She told them everything. They did let me look over the report just to see if there's anything else that I could add to it. Actually, when I saw the report is when I saw his real name for the first time. She did not want to press charges. If nothing else, it got his real name on the record. And it did push something out into the open that she had been trying to hide. And I did feel guilty about that for a long time because I didn't want the worst night of her life to be something that defined her or that be something that people looked down on her for. She did not want to go to the hospital. She did not want to do anything that I made her do that day. I didn't know if there were other things going on that I needed to be aware of to help her heal. At the time, I didn't know if he had sexually assaulted her. Then we went to spend the night in a hotel that night because I was worried that he might come back, that her house wasn't safe. And that's really what I want the support person for somebody that's going through an abusive situation to know is that, listen, it's hard. You are not going to know what you're supposed to do. You're not going to know how to show up for this person. You are not going to understand the roller coaster that you are about to go on. I did what I knew to do that day, was just to take care of the basics, police, hospital, get her out of the situation. And so that's what I did. When I got Brooke to the hotel, that's when I found out this whole relationship. It was nothing like what I thought. He was married and his mom knew about what was going on and so did his wife. When she's telling me all this stuff at the hotel, my mind is just being blown over and over and over again. One of the reasons that Brooke and I were close was because she did have a very deep faith, and I did too. And it's not that the other people in the neighborhood didn't. I just think we were able to talk about it on a different level. The faith part becomes a bigger deal when you bring in the wife and his mother, because they were using her faith against her to keep her in this abusive relationship. His mother would call her and beg her to stay, compare their relationship to David and Bathsheba in the Bible. It really did shake her until she was so confused. She really didn't know what she was supposed to be thinking or feeling anymore. So for them to make it into like this, hey, this is okay because King David did it too, was just a horrible way to use her faith against her. She had a lot of internal conflict around that as well. That was just one more thing that we had to unravel and talk through. The same night that I took her to the police station, that I took her to the hospital, I found all of this stuff out. So for the past 4 years, I had not known any of this. Brooke did not want me to talk to anybody about anything that was going on. I can totally understand it. Not only was she trying to keep her kids out of the loop and keep the rumors to a minimum, she was embarrassed and ashamed. And I think that's very common for people that have been in this situation to feel. And it makes me so mad every time that the one that's actually doing all this, excuse my language, but fucked up shit, that they are not the ones who are ashamed and embarrassed. They're just out there living their life like they're not doing anything wrong. She had no reason to feel ashamed or embarrassed. She was being horribly manipulated in every way that you can think of. I don't really know how people came to know what happened. Everything happened so fast that I know that people in the neighborhood did know pretty quickly. I think that she had reached out to somebody to see if they could pick up her kids from school that day, and somebody kind of put the pieces together. The fact that I was not sharing information with people really put a stop to most of the friendships in my neighborhood. Luckily, I have a very great relationship with my mother because I could talk to my mom about this and know that everything I told her was going to be in confidence. I think a lot of people felt like I was guarding information and just trying to be the only one that she was reaching out to, and that wasn't it at all. It's just the simple fact that she told me she didn't want anybody to know anything, and so I didn't tell anybody. Also, I knew that we were going to have to go to court for custody issues because the kids had been in the house, and I did not want anybody else to have to be in that situation that I was going to be in. Nobody wants to have to go to court to testify about anything. It did bring a lot of things out in the open that I'm sure she would have preferred to not have happen. Her first husband did take her to court for custody. I did have to testify. It was months that they were in the court system. They did work out a custody agreement. I don't want to talk a lot about that because that does involve the kids. There's just one more thing that she was so stressed about and just trying to deal with during this time. So I'm trying to get her through all the psychological trauma that she's going through. And now she's got to worry about her kids, which was devastating to her. So after all this happened, we found her a place to go to and just wanted to get her as far away from Arkansas and out of her house where the abuse had actually happened. So we got her to a place in California. I flew out there with her, got her settled, dropped her off, flew home the next day. I think she stayed out there for a month. It was just the right thing to do. And they did help her. She came back a lot calmer with a clearer head and was able to understand how to handle all the situations that she had gone through. She at least was equipped with a little bit more information and didn't feel so alone. It took at least a year for her to have a good week. I had found her a therapist. The therapist was pretty good for her. She ended up finding some other therapists to help her through. One was like an equine therapy place where she would go and she could lead a horse around this obstacle course. Another one, she had started to do some deeper work in EMDR. I will tell you, this was a very hard, long process. So this was not, I took her to the police, got her away from him, and then she never saw him again. That, unfortunately, is not what happened. I know she had done a protective order in 2016. Even after she went through all of this with the courts and everything, she did still see him. He did still have a hold on her. He was still manipulating her. I had no idea. I thought we had got her away from him and that things were better until I found out that wasn't true at all. And this is where, as a support person, it's just so freaking hard. This is when you realize that not only is this monster abusing someone you love, but they are abusing you too, because you are stuck in this nightmarish loop of getting them back to good and then them slowly being drawn away again and again. And it is devastating. It is heartbreaking. It is lonely. And you don't want to say anything that's going to make them feel like they are not intelligent or they are weak, because that's not the reality of what is happening at all. The reality is that this person has mindfucked them and they cannot get out from under it. And the cycle just continues. One night after all the court stuff was over, we went to dinner, Brooke and I and another friend of ours. All three of us were really close. We were sitting on the deck of this restaurant and she tells me that she has seen him again. I just remember thinking, what are you talking about? I have just gone to court for you. I have given up nights at my own house for you. I have taken away time with my own kids to be there for you. And you're seeing him again? I was so upset. I started crying and shaking. I just got up and went to the bathroom. I couldn't even say anything. And I didn't trust myself to say anything right then. So I went to the bathroom, pulled myself together, and went back out there. We were both upset and we were crying. We decided to go back to our friend's house. She rode with her and I followed them in my car. My friend called and she was like, Brooke is really, really upset and I'm a little nervous of the way she's acting. So we pulled over and I called her counselor. The counselor talked to Brooke, got the situation calmed down a little bit, but we went back to Brooke's house and all of a sudden the police show up. Her counselor, when she talked to Brooke, Brooke had said some things that concerned her and so she called the police. Well, having the police in our gossipy little neighborhood, was horrible because Brooke has already gone through so much and now the police are there again and everybody's wondering what's going on and it turned into another big fiasco. You could just see this was really starting to get a little bit further out of control for her. I hesitate to use the word out of control because she did not act out. It was the overload of information that other people were generating about her, I think. She was worried everybody was gossiping about her and making up rumors, which just is another type of an abuse that she had to go through. And it just made everything harder. It is now 2017. I know she had done a protective order in 2017. This has been going on for a year or more. And she is starting to get a little bit better. There seems to be some improvement. She's still going to work and she's still doing a great job. And after this happened, we became very close. It wasn't always just me trying to help her through this horrible situation in her life. It was her helping me as well. I had to have brain surgery and she's the one that got me into the doctor and she's the one that took the staples out of my head. It was a lot of profound things that happened in both of our lives and we were there for one another in a way that nobody else was. And over time you build this trust, like I'm going to give you some of the hardest things of my life and you have the grace to stand there beside me and help me walk through it. That's when you know that you are somebody's person, that you're a real friend. So all this time, Brooke is up and down, still seeing him. Most of the time, not. We're trying to work through it. She's going through her counselor. I'm trying to gauge my reactions to things. I learned to be kind of stoic when she would tell me that she saw him. And it wasn't always she went to go see him. It was I went for a run and when I came back, he was standing at my car type of thing. He just could not let her go. This went on for a really long time until around 2019, I think she felt comfortable enough to try to start dating again. She did start dating and she found a guy that she fell in love with and they got married. This was in October of 2019. I didn't know him that well. I mean, they hadn't really been dating that long. Of course, she has her kids. He also had three kids. So together, they were the Brady Bunch. They seemed to have an okay relationship. Later on in 2019, almost Christmas, my husband got diagnosed with leukemia. After he called me, I called Brooke and she got us into the oncologist. This was on a Friday. She got us in on that Monday. And she really checked on him and took care of us and made sure that everything was good. This was going into 2020. So 2020 started out for my family with my husband having leukemia and Brooke seeming like she was going to be okay. I do know this about both of Brooke's husbands. They were not abusive to her. All the abuse she suffered was this boyfriend in between them. But I do know that the honeymoon period for her second marriage did not last very long. I mean, there's six kids between them. There's a lot of different dynamics going in there. I don't think Brooke had healed from the abuse that she had suffered from the boyfriend. We had a situation in 2020 and sent her back to rehab for a little while, not because of alcohol or drugs, but just because she seemed to be having trouble regulating her emotions and processing. I'm sure the stress of having three additional kids, even though she loved them, was weighing on her. It was hard because then right when she went into that, it was lockdown for 2020. And she was a nurse, so a lot of stress. 2020 was the perfect storm for a lot of different things. Her best friend's husband was in the hospital with leukemia. She sold her house and then they moved to a new house together. So she's trying to make a new home. They're trying to navigate all these new things. And she's still not processing all the things that have happened in her past. I was very worried about Brooke that summer. She just did not seem herself. She did not seem happy. She was having trouble processing all of her emotions and all of her feelings about what had happened. And even though she was married, she still had a lot of deep feelings for her boyfriend. She never said that, but I know that she did. It was all the things happening at once. I remember her and I and our friend went to dinner, and it was a Thursday night. We all had a margarita and we were about to order some fajitas or whatever. And she says, "I need to go talk to my friend." We were like, "Well, okay, we'll see you soon. Love you." And she left. And then that weekend, she took her kids back to school shopping. So we just kind of checked in a little bit, didn't really talk. And then that Monday morning,
I was getting ready for work. I was in my kitchen and I was ironing a green dress. I just got it. And the phone rang and it was her ex-husband. So I was about to answer it and another call came in and it was her current husband. And I was like, okay. So I picked up the phone and he was like, "Jen, we can't find her." And I was like, okay, I'm headed out right now. And I clicked over and I was like, "Hey, I just talked to him. I know what's going on. I'm leaving right now." And he said, "Okay." I dropped the iron and burned my arm. And I got dressed as fast as I could and got in my car. I was just started driving, trying to figure out where she had gone. I got a call and it was her ex-husband. And he said, "She's gone." And I remember so clearly every single thing about this day. I got off the phone with him and I called my mom and I was just crying. My mom answered, she heard me crying and she's like, "Is she gone?" And I said, "Yeah." And so I went to where she was. She had a car accident. I didn't want to remember her that way. So I called our other friend and she met me there. And it was just the most surreal, like, I can't believe that this is happening.
Her sister and I went and cleaned out her car, picked out what she was going to be buried in. We picked out a very nice dress for her. She looked beautiful, of course. I wrote her obituary and my dad gave the eulogy. Her family was devastated, of course, and they were making sure the kids were okay. We were actually at the funeral and this was the most amazing God wink of all time. We were lowering her to the ground. For some reason, I had my phone in my hand. I saw a flash on my screen and looked down and it said, "You have an airdrop from Brooke." And there was this picture of Brooke that I'd never seen before. I don't know who sent it. It said it was from her. I, of course, freaked out. I told her husband immediately. I was like, "Is there anybody that has access to Brooke's phone? Because this is what I just got." We went back to the house and no, her phone was still there. So I have no idea who sent it to me. But I do think it was Brooke telling me goodbye. And it was of her in a stable, petting a horse. And she was happy. I didn't realize until all of that had happened and she was gone, all the time that I had spent with her, all the time I spent worrying about her. Because when she wasn't there to fill all that time, it was very difficult to know what to do when I was so used to having all that space in my life was reserved for her. So after all of this, you go home and your husband still has cancer and your kids are still a mess because you're a mess and it's still COVID and all around you is this horrible news. And I really did not care about how I looked, if I was getting out of bed, if I wasn't getting out of bed. I did still have to go to work. I would drag myself in, sometimes wearing matching socks, most of the time not. My business partner at the time kept calling me bisexual. And the first thing I did when I got to the office was take my shoes off. I thought that was really cute. It made me smile. And not too much was making me smile. So I went and bought all the domains for bisexual, which I still love that name. And I knew I wanted to do something with it. I finally realized I just want to give back and I want to help people that are abused leave their situation because it's so hard. But if you can just leave, even if all you grab on your way out the door are the mismatched socks that are laying there, leave anyway. So that's what we started to do with bisexual. We did get picked up by a few Dillards. I was about to rebrand because even though I love the brand name Bisexual, and I still have it, I wanted something where I didn't have to be there to explain how much this meant to me.
So I thought Anyway was a great name because I want people to be able to leave any way they can. I don't want anybody to care about somebody as much as I cared about Brooke and not know how to be there for them and lose them. Brooke is not this abused person who ended up gone. She is this fierce, intelligent, beautiful woman who was manipulated by an evil person. And I will never forget her, and I don't want anybody to ever forget her.
So the socks, we put three in a set. There's three different individual socks with their own personalities. The reason that we say we do that is because if I give you a pair of socks, you only have one way to wear them. And if I give you three, you have three ways to wear them, which is true.
But the real reason that there are three is because Brooke has three wonderful children. And I want them represented in every single thing that I do to give back to domestic abuse organizations.
The other thing we try to do is we want local dollars to stay local. So whether you're a retailer or a boutique or a Dillard's, we want the employees to pick out what domestic abuse organization they want their donations to go to. We do give back at least 10% of total revenue to domestic abuse organizations. And so up here where I live in Northwest Arkansas, we give back to the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter and another organization called Peace at Home. Every Dillard's, their employees choose one where they are. So there's Pensacola, there's Georgia, some other places. There's a boutique in Arizona that we give back to their local one. So if you are a boutique or retailer that would like to carry these socks, please let me know. And we are more than happy to coordinate with your local shelter to make sure that they get donations from us. We do have a website, anywaysocks.com. We do have men's socks and we have women's socks and we have all different types of socks. How many times can I say socks is what you're probably all wondering. We are also on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and it's at anywaysocks. We would love to have you join us and keep our mission going strong and keep Brooke's memory flying high because we sure do miss her.
What would you shift about the general perspective surrounding domestic violence?
I don't think that people realize that abuse is a cycle that goes on and on. And it's not easy to walk away from somebody who has manipulated you into thinking they are your only reason for living. You can be the smartest, most beautiful, most intelligent person in the world. And if somebody gets under your skin and identifies the things you're insecure about, they can manipulate you into doing anything. And nobody understands that from the outside. They don't have that emotional pull that you do to your abuser. Abuse is unexplainable in so many different ways. I don't know what she saw in him, but I know that if Brooke can be manipulated, that anybody can, because she was the strongest person that I knew. Everybody has their story. Everybody has their struggles. I think that there should be a program for people who are trying to help people go through abuse. You don't know how to navigate it. It's very exhausting to watch somebody jump on and off this cycle. It's isolating. The hardest thing that I ever had to do was continue to be a support person for her. And I would love for there to be some type of program. Just like you're helping somebody go through dementia or Alzheimer's or cancer or whatever else, the support person is there just doing the very best they can. And you feel so much pressure and so much exhaustion trying to be there for them that if anybody out there would like to try to put together a support system for people helping those go through an abusive relationship, then I mean, I'm right there with you. I will help you get it out to the masses as much as I can because they need you as a support person. And it's very hard to be that person.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. In the hardest portions
of everything you've shared, what was the resource, tool, anything that helped carry you through it?
I'm a very spiritual person. I prayed a lot. I cried a lot. I talked to my mom a lot. I read dozens of articles from all the abuse organizations. It pretty much confirmed that her reactions to the abuse were what would be considered normal. But what it doesn't tell you is how to deal with that in a way that's going to help you progress their healing. That part was really hard. I just prayed as hard as I could.
I was mad at God for a long time. I'm not now, but I was. And I also think that's a normal reaction. I know that I did the best that I could. I know that I'm still doing the best that I can, but I miss her.
Well, I'm just so grateful that you were willing to share with us. Thank you for all of your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
As we got older and we moved past the stubborn teenage years, we built our own lives, different families, careers, responsibilities. But we never stopped being connected in that super deep, unspoken way that only sisters are. For about 2 years, we lived in the same town, actually up until she met her husband that she was married to at the time of her death. We would see each other every single day. But before she passed, she was a little pulled back from us. And that was totally unlike Crystal, almost like isolated from us. It was so disheartening because we didn't get to spend that last Christmas with her.
Thank you again to First Day for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget that for a limited time only, our listeners are getting an insane deal. Use code WCN to get up to 57% off at firstday.com. That's up to 57% off and a free gift with code WCN at firstday.com. After you make a purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them What Came Next sent you. What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.